Acts chapter 4, beginning in verse 32. And both the heart and the soul of the multitude of those who had come to have faith were one. And no one said that any of the possessions belonging to him was his own, but everything was owned among them communally. And the apostles of the Lord Jesus bore witness to the resurrection with great power, and great grace was upon all of them. For neither was anyone among them in need, for as many as were propertyers of land or households were selling them and bringing the profits of the things sold and laying them at the feet of the apostles. And there was a redistribution to each according as anyone had need. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So by my count, in Acts chapter 4, this moment that sort of represents throughout time and history the ideals of Christian community, we have four miracles to my count. Some of them more ordinary, some of them more extreme. The first miracle is that everybody just gets along, which is amazing. Like, of one heart and soul. You know, when you think about, like, what does that really mean, a heart and a soul? I mean, the soul, at the very least, your soul is tied to the word for life for these people. Your whole life is ultimately about something. There's something your life is about. Might be about your own career. Might be about your children. Might be about your city. It might be about the story you tell yourself about a hobby or a sports team. But at the end of the day, there's one thing that your life is ultimately about, and everything else falls into place underneath that one single point. And for these early followers of the way of Jesus, there was a moment of total unity where everyone's life, in all its distinctives, with all of its differences, everyone's life became tied to a single vision of what was good and what was true and what was worth giving our attention to. By the way, can you hear me in the back loud enough? Okay, good. If you ever need a louder, just like thumbs up. Ah, nobody needs me louder though, that's true. Second thing, their possessions. No one no longer holds individual possessions. It's not something they possess, but everything they have begins to be held in common. To the degree that people are selling off their properties, no longer participating in the economic system as is, but pooling their resources. Now, it's worth noting, we don't know how widespread this was. This is in Jerusalem. The people in Jerusalem may not have been from that city originally, so this might have been for a time to establish people in a place of mission. This might have been the way that it went for the whole initial season of the church. It's also worth noting that, you know, communists, calm down. You know, communists read Acts 4, they get real excited. There it is in the text. Yeah, but you know, typically the way communism goes is somebody comes to you and takes your stuff and then redistributes it. That's different than you offering your things and it being redistributed. Capitalists, don't get too excited. It's way harder on you. It's much more communist than capitalist. So nobody's happy, but we got our ideals, don't we? The ideals that nobody takes from any of us, that we all give, and that we give so freely, and here's the third miracle. In this case, they actually have leaders worthy of being trusted. There's a third miracle, right? If I was like, sell all you have and give it to the poor, you wouldn't sell all you have and give it to like Jill to redistribute, even though we all trust Jill, of course. Note I say Jill, not me, because that's not even worth joking about. Nobody's trusting me with their resources, which I wouldn't want you to. I don't know what to do with numbers. But this is like the kind of idea is like they trust one another. Their lives are so intertwined that they'll hand over resources and say, you know what the community needs, you distribute this. And I will say, there are people I would trust, maybe not with all my resources, I still have a couple possessions, Lord have mercy, But there are people I would trust, and we see echoes of this. But the Christian community more broadly, we don't have this sort of shared trust within the whole community. And the fourth miracle, as a result of all of this, the needs of everyone are covered. The needs of every person in the worshiping community taken care of. And lest these first three miracles sound too lofty for us or sound too far away, think about how good it would feel psychically, like mentally, how healthy and well would you feel if you knew that everyone else you were bonded to was being taken care of? How much of our sickness, how much of our mental unwellness comes from the fact that we know that we do not live in a just society? That in fact, not even just in the society, but even in the church, we know there are people who have needs that may not be met. And so, you know, there's a huge relief that also must have come to these first disciples. The freedom of not having to carry all that stuff around. The freedom of knowing that everyone was being cared for. The freedom of having trust and unity with one another. I don't know if we can get back there, but it must have felt pretty good to be alive for a moment when it really did feel like heaven had crashed into earth and that heaven was doing its work among ordinary people. And all of this is given as a great gift. It says a great grace was given to them. So every day there's grace being given to them. The gift of what each one needs being given to each one each day. Now, I don't know how you feel meditating on Acts chapter 4 in the early church. I will confess that whenever I read this text, I get a little bit depressed. Because it's like, man, they were really doing it. And we mostly show up on Sundays. All right, like team church, modern world, 2024, we're doing it. But like, it is a little depressing to compare the idealism of this early church moment to the realism of our present church life. You know, you compare this to modern Christianity with all of our power games and our exclusivity and the ways that we don't necessarily consider our neighbors and don't consider all of the others in the household of God even to begin. You know, there's still failure in the early church. It's worth pointing out that right after this, there's a story about someone lying to the collective. So it's the idealism, even for them, is short-lived. But they've got it at all, and we don't have it at all. And that makes me want to, like, dismiss the text. Or that makes me want to pretend that things aren't difficult here and now. But, you know, I just want to acknowledge to start just the tension. I think it's worth just acknowledging that these are two different visions. Ancient Christianity had a particularly beautiful and radical vision, and today, I don't even know how we would begin to do this. I don't even know if we would want to do this. And maybe that's fine. Like, I don't know, how would we all start selling our stuff? I know the second we started trying to do this, insurance companies and lawyers would show up, and they'd be like, actually, you need to do this in a proper policy, and like, it would just become immediately annoying. And like, how would we know who has what needs? We get a board out somewhere in the back where people write down, like, I'm short on rent, and somebody else gives them cash. That could be kind of cool. But what happens if you pay somebody's mortgage off, and then they just decide to stop coming to church, and suddenly they're not part of the family anymore? I mean, we live in an individualized society. We don't even all know each other's names. Again, no knock. We don't even know each other's names. How can we give each other resources? We'd have to trust each other and God so remarkably when we don't have hard membership lists and we're going to start sharing our financial resources. Am I out of line here, or are you all sort of like, we don't want to do this? I am a little bit like, I'm fine, actually. Thank you. And yet, two things. I don't want to let us off the hook. I feel like we can joke about this, and I don't think God needs us to do anything that we couldn't at present do, but I suspect that the Spirit will keep moving us in this direction over time, especially as the economy outside of this building gets more and more aggressive. And as it becomes harder and harder to simply survive, we are going to need to have a communalism. We are going to need to start thinking of what we've been given as not being something we possess. We may need to do some economic redistribution. And I'm not saying this for the world. Again, this isn't like restating go communism. I'm just talking about the church. Just the church. I'm talking about just Eucharist, but let's even go further. The church in Hamilton. Could we begin to see that no one actually possesses anything? Could we begin to live a little more like this? And what freedom might come to us? What psychic liberation might occur if we could look around a room like this and know that everyone's needs are provided for? And while not wanting to let us off the hook, I do want to say, I do think we have something. Like when I look around the room, I don't know all of you and I don't know all your stories, but I know many of you, and I know that many of you have your needs provided for. Even more than that, I know of stories, testimonies we used to call them, about how people in this room have been provided for by God's working among other people in this room. And if we extended it to the wider Church of Hamilton, I have got story after story after story about the wider Church of Hamilton taking care of brothers and sisters and redistributing resources and finances and housing, doing all that they can to make sure everyone has a job, everyone has a place to sleep, everyone has some money. I've got stories of unity across differences, of redistribution of possessions, of trust in leadership, even those who are different. I have stories that I hear about people's needs being met, envelopes of cash being given from person to person within this congregation. Don't look around though for like who's got an envelope that might, who's got some cash that might need to go somewhere. It just happens under the radar. We don't trumpet it. We don't like put it on the internet because that would destroy the integrity of the generosity. It is kept secret. We bury the generous acts so that those seeds might produce more good deeds. We really are taking care of each other. Among the wider church, I am shocked by how much we take care of each other. Word is getting around. A friend of mine runs a business, and he asked another friend of mine if he knew any Christians that he could hire at his business. He's not a Christian, the guy who owns the business. My friend said, like, why do you want a list? Because my friend, the business owner, knew the guy was a Christian. So he said, do you know any Christians I can hire? He's like, why are you asking if there are any Christians that I could hire? And he said, because all the Christian people seem to just work harder and be nicer. Well done. If we were in the book of Acts, it would say, and all of them were a little bit nicer and tended to work a little bit harder. Not a bad reputation. This is the funny thing. Like, when I tell people about what the church is up to, they're pretty surprised. Like a ministry like Open Homes is insane to the modern mind. Open Homes says to new arrivals that come to this country who don't have a place to stay, that they can live with a family from a church while they get their footing, and that other Christians will come and help them get to their appointments and find a place to live permanently. People aren't just out doing that. Apple, the company, has a lot more money than the church. They are out here helping people get settled when they move to this country. There are corporations out there making tons of money. They're not building any affordable housing. And yet a Christian organization like Indwell is helping solve a housing crisis in this city because Christians gave money recklessly as if they didn't possess it. And then people go and make fun of Christian organizations. Oh, Christian organizations always looking out. Oh, stop it. Are you kidding me? Christian organizations exist because Christians are generous. They actually are. They give way more money than all these secularists. I'm not trying to pick a fight. I'm just right. You know, and when all those worldly secularists with their technology start showing us how they're using it for the common good, even their own other tech people take care of them first. But then you're going to spill out and try to take care of the poor on the streets and start organizations and create housing? Like, no, we should be very grateful that we are Christian. We should be, in the proper sense, proud to be part of a faith that lives out any of this Acts 4 idealism in any way. And we should also be humble because we have made lots of mistakes. And we have had lots of power and we have not always stewarded it well. And we have been greatly humbled. We don't need to do a show of hands, but who in this room loves it when people at work find out you're religious? It's not always comfortable. It's good, though. It is good for us to be humbled. It is good for us to be brought into a place where we are no longer triumphant. And even when we're bad at it, we still might be among the best in this culture at living out these ideals. I'm going to read a quick little excerpt from a book called The Useful Sinner. It's a book about, it was written in 1990 by a man who had had an affair, and his marriage then, when he confessed his affair, his marriage was obviously in a very difficult spot. The marriage of the woman he was having an affair with was in a terrible spot, and that marriage ended up breaking apart. Business was involved, very, very awful and messy. And he writes this book about the years of healing from his own sin, and he talks about how God used his own shortcomings, his own failures, to actually bring life into the communities around them. Hence him being a useful sinner, useful to God, not useful to the people he sinned against. But he's talking about he and his wife. And I thought that the way that he described this feels quite a bit like how the kind of Acts 4 vision of care might practically be lived out in our own more modern setting. So a reading from this as we move to the end. We have seen a fairly consistent pattern. An individual or family with needs, which is met by an individual or family. The needs may be for money, shelter, rest, hospitality, encouragement, or guidance. The wonder of this pattern is that those in need and those with the resources to help may not know each other and may be great distances apart. The facilitation of the institutional church in this process is usually not material. I do not recall a single situation in which any individual or family has remained permanently in the same role. The helpers of today will have needs tomorrow. Those who have been helped step up to assist. I don't know if memories or stories come to mind for you in that, but I think about people who have told me they received meal trains from this congregation, and then they started making meals for others who needed meals. I think about people in this congregation who had homes destroyed or moving, scheduling changes, and who lived with others in this community for a season. I know of others who have given resources to those who have need, but in all of these cases, I know of examples where the opposite occurs. Those who have received hospitality later offer hospitality. Those who have received mercy extend mercy. Why? Why does all this occur? Is it because we get together and work really hard to become good people? No, not really. Is it because, you know, we feel like we have to prove ourselves as Christians to make sure that we've got a good name in the world? That's not it either. These things happen automatically. They so rarely come about as a response to strategy. It's just an individual or a family with their ear attentive to what God might bring for them to do today. Because Jesus is living among us. And each of us will receive a word from the resurrected Christ about how to give and how to receive with the great grace that has been given to each one of us today. Amen. Take another minute of silence to sit with the Spirit and see if there's something that God is impressing upon your own heart.